All right, welcome in, Mason Both, Drew Galloway here with you, KSO Show, on a Monday, ready to go, doing exactly what I promised you. I said, hey, we're going to start just going live every time we do this thing. That way you can comment, you can say whatever you want to us in the middle of it, because I understand sometimes I might skip around. You might go, Drew said something interesting there. Can we clarify what he meant better? You can fact check us right here, get that all underway. And just, a little something to get you through the day. The worst part of the day, 3 o'clock. Now, when I was in radio and up in the morning, I was already home by now. So for me, that worst part of the day was like 1 o'clock. I'm just like, what's the point? Just had lunch. Am I going to do anything these last 2 hours of the day? Spoiler alert, I didn't do anything those last 2 hours of the day. So we are doing something with the final 2 hours of our day right here. Probably have 45 minutes to an hour for you today. We'll see. We got a lot of stuff to get into. Drew's got recruiting update. We're going to talk everything that's going on with K-State men's basketball right now, kind of the outlook that they have. It's going to be fascinating to compare the different situations that the men and the women are in. We're going to talk about the men from the standpoint of what they have left to play for is basically the Big 12 tournament. We'll look at what that path might look like. It's a little murkier after what took place yesterday in the Big 12. And then for the women, how their season gets judged for the most part to me probably comes down to these final two regular season games. So we'll look at what is going on there. What they have tonight is obviously they host Baylor in a big one. K-State baseball revived everything. So a lot to get to on a Monday. Hope everybody enjoys it. Drew, we'll start by letting the people know that K-State is going to Ireland to play some football. So if you want to get your travel hospitality packages and get to go to the game in style, cats2ireland.com is the place for you. If you want to get just single game tickets, you only have 4 days left to do so at kstatesports.com. So kick us off with an Ireland fun fact today.
So today's fun fact is Ireland is also known as Hibernia, which means the land of winter, because it doesn't really get warm in Ireland. I don't know if anybody else knew that. When K-State plays there, it's going to be like in the 50s and probably raining.
I wouldn't have known it other than the fact that throughout however long I've been seeing these games play in Ireland over like the last 3 or 4 years, it always seems like it's raining or it doesn't look warm. So I was anticipating it on probably being more like spring and not like a sunny spring day, but like a cloudy spring day. But you're telling me it's going to be more like one of those gross fall days with some rain coming down.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be like 50s and probably rain.
All right, well, everybody, bring your rain gear over there to Ireland and or just be ready to spend too much money on like a poncho inside the stadium. I'm sure the capitalistic principles of sports events in Ireland are the exact same as the U.S. Although I say that, they had issues with the beer when Nebraska was over there, right? And they just were like, take it for free, I guess that would go in the total opposite direction of $10 ponchos that probably cost 5 cents to make.
Bold choice if they run out of beer with these two fan bases. So hopefully they're stocked up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they better be ready. I'm sure they will have to be ready to go. Now, when you think of these two fan bases, you obviously have been around K-State more. Which one do you think is a little bit more likely to go overboard throughout the drinking process in Ireland?
I'll hedge my bet and say whoever's losing.
Well, that's probably the most accurate answer that you can give. All right, let's dive in. Let's start talking recruiting, Drew. You had stuff for us today, but I'll probably start by pointing out that here we are once again. Everybody knows we're talking tight end for K-State as their number one target. The best player in the state of Kansas in 2026 is Ian Premer out of Great Bend, and he just got a bump in the latest On3 rankings. Now the 25th player in the country, according to On3.
Yeah, Ian Premer is a stud. He's actually ranked higher right now than Lincoln Cure ever was, if you can believe that. I mean, we've talked about how rankings work. They slowly get to that 32 five stars for the 32 first round draft picks. So right now, not a five star, but in a few months, if he keeps that 25th ranking, he will also have five star beside his name. So that, I think that that's something that's really noteworthy. And again, Kansas high school football has came such a long way from even when like you and I were in high school. It's now becoming how many guys in this class can get to like 4 and 5 stars status throughout the years. And this one, again, I'm a little bit more down on it than the last few, but I think in this last update, there's 4 Kansas kids in the top 300. So it's crazy to say that that's like a down year for Kansas right now, but that is kind of just where it is.
So just to give some context on the Premier side of things, is that he's the better prospect than Lincoln Cure, or is it just relative to what the rest of the 2026 classes? And obviously, talking about relativity, this in no way is an indictment on Lincoln Cure, no matter what your answer is here. But I'm just curious on where that sits, because I think the consensus from a lot of people regionally and nationally was Lincoln Cure is a freaking stud, and nobody had an issue that 24/7 had him in 5-star range. And others would look and say, yeah, just this class got him bumped out of it for like the industry ranking. So where is it in terms of Premier talent compared to Cure, or the class compared to what Cure had?
I think it's a little bit of the class, but I think that with all the potential in the world that Lincoln Cure has, you could argue Ian Premier's ceiling is even a little bit higher, because I think that he is even a little bit more raw than where Cure was at this stage of their development. But like you said, this is like the slimmest of margins between the two. Premier does do a lot on the football field that is really unique for somebody his size. I mean, he was Great Bend's punt returner this season, so you don't really see that a lot. And I think that a thing that's probably bumping him up even more is Lincoln Cure is a good basketball player, but I think that Ian Premier is an even better basketball player. And I think that everybody's kind of banking on those intangibles, kind of bumping him up even further.
Yeah, that's true. And we know he, you know, has the K-State basketball offer out there too, probably to try and entice and just, you know, hey, come try and do both. If you want to be at K-State, and you've been pretty adamant, I think, over the last couple of weeks, maybe longer, that K-State and Iowa State feel like the top two right now for Premier. Is that a pretty well-defined top two, like until we get to whenever that commitment date is, it's going to be those two and nobody else is going to be able to wedge in?
I'd say it's those two. USD is kind of lingering around. KU is kind of lingering around. I will say that the only official visit that Ian Premier has scheduled right now is to K-State. So take that with what you will.
All right. Well, that's good to know. What else on the K-State football recruiting front do you have? Because I don't think you anticipated coming in and talking about Ian Premier specific ranking now. So I think you had some other stuff you wanted to dive into. So let everybody know, because you're going to have another big board coming out soon that's loaded with names, so many that you apologized this morning to me when you said how many were on there. So what else should everybody be up to speed on with recruiting in K-State football?
Yeah, so the two observations that I have are, right now K-State has 13 official visits scheduled. Yeah, I find it interesting that 4 are running backs and 4 defensive ends. Now, you're probably only going to take one of those running backs, so I'm really interested to see what happens there. You're probably maybe taking 2 defensive ends, so I'm excited to see what happens there. The other observation that I've really noticed as a whole this cycle has been that Oklahoma State hasn't been a team that K-State has gone head-to-head with much over the last 2, 3, 4 cycles. But while I was writing the big board, and part of the reason that I apologized to you is I felt like I kept saying, oh yeah, and this guy also has a visit to Oklahoma State scheduled, and a visit to Oklahoma State scheduled, and you're seeing that more and more. And I think that that's part of K-State having to get out of Kansas a little bit in this class and going into more of like Oklahoma and Texas, because you're going to run into Oklahoma State a lot more. So I just find that really fascinating. I think that of the 13 official visits that are scheduled, I think 5 or 6 have scheduled a visit to Oklahoma State as well.
I think you're right. The two most common things that came up as repeats in the big board were, yes, Oklahoma State being involved as well. But the other one, and this may have been more, is how many times it had to be noted how things might change now because of Matt Wells, Brian Lepak, or Luke Wells situation. There's like that reconfiguration is interesting. And I guess as we get, you know, further removed from the Connor Riley news and the staff being put into place, are you getting any indication on what impact that's having either in a big way or really no way at all in terms of what K-State's trying to do?
I think it really hasn't impacted a ton yet. I think that offensive line, they're still kind of retooling because you, probably priority number one is to lock down LaMarcus Barber because they just need to get something of substance from this class in Kansas. And then after that, you probably only need one other offensive lineman so you can be a little bit more selective. And then tight end, like I said, they already have an official visit scheduled with Ian Premer. So you'd think that nothing has really changed with Luke Wells coming in and getting involved. Isaac Jensen is another prospect to really know about from Nebraska, who, interestingly, I'm not sure how much Nebraska is really involved at this stage of the game for him because he has six visits scheduled for the spring, all unofficials, and Nebraska is not one of them. And I thought that was really interesting and also noteworthy. And I imagine it's the same with Premer, but him and I have been kind of playing a little bit of phone tag recently. But Isaac Jensen said that one of the first things that Luke Wells did when he was moving in was message Jensen and say that, hey, like, I'm going to talk to you after I get all of my stuff like scheduled up and or settled in and everything. So I think that he's a pretty big target to know at this stage as well.
I mean, we know it's going to be a smaller class. I think that's something that if people haven't heard us say yet or paid attention, that's something just to keep in mind when, you know, if we get to December and people are talking about team rankings and whoever it is talking about, okay, K-State was, you know, 59th this year, whereas that, you know, they've been around the top 40 the last couple of years, one of the better classes in the Big 12. It'll be a smaller class, but do you think because it seems like there's so much contact with Jensen that we know it may be tough to get Premer because of the cure thing, but K-State still, I think, would probably be the leader at this point in time. Do they like both enough to where you would take two tight ends in this class, despite the fact that you'll have a lot of tight ends on this roster coming back next year? Lincoln Cure obviously will be in the fold. Is there room for two, or is that something where they're going to probably just have to say, man, we really like this guy, but numbers wise, it doesn't make sense?
They're probably going to have to make the numbers work. So I don't think that taking two would make it work, but it's going to be a tight class. And like, that's why it's really interesting. And I think that, again, some of it just stems from not being able to get everybody in Kansas. There's a lot of targets out there right now and not a lot of spots. So this is one where I think that if you can get a commit or two in like that March, April, May, then you're really kind of setting the tone for what else is a need. And kind of, I think that's where you see the momentum and the dam really break, because after you get a couple more guys, the spots get even smaller. Because I think that this class might end with 14 to 16 high school signees is all.
Real quick, I want to ask you about Davis Penn, one of the running backs that's in this group right now, because there are a number of running backs. But again, that's one where what's the total number in this class going to be? You think it's just one running back?
Probably just one. You can maybe get a second one, but I think one is probably the right answer right now.
All right, so Davis Penn had committed to Baylor. He decommitted in January, I believe. And when he talked to you, he referred to K-State as the running back U of the Big 12, which I think would excite people to hear a recruit from outside the state of Kansas think that about K-State. It's good to know when there is perception from guys outside your state at that age to recognize some of that for K-State. So, because of what he said, I think there's probably interest in Davis Penn. So what can you tell us there without giving too much away? Because you do have a full-blown update from Davis Penn. And I thought, you know, it's one of the better recruiting updates that we've seen in a while, just from what he said and kind of laying everything out there. He's a fascinating recruit to me at this point in time.
Yeah, he's somebody that I think wouldn't be in that, like, first group of guys that I think will commit to K-State or could commit to K-State, but he's probably in that second tier. I think that after getting the offer, it kind of turned his head a little bit. He's already scheduled official visit to K-State. And you just look, and K-State doesn't really miss on running backs much. So when they lock on to a guy or two, they're probably going to end up being studs wherever they end up. Him already being at Baylor and then decommitting was really interesting because he decommitted from Baylor, I think, like 2 or 3 days later, K-State offered. So I think that they kind of saw that and knew that this was kind of their chance to go into it. I think he has an official visit scheduled to Tulane as well, which that might not like be the biggest thing that everybody's like, oh, a Tulane, but Tulane has had some really good running backs too.
I was going to say, if K-State's the running back you of the Big 12, Tulane's the running back you of at least the AAC, maybe of G5.
Yeah, you can argue that of all of G5.
Yeah. All right. Well, in terms of anything I'm missing here that you want to make note of before we move on to current Cats and what we've seen in basketball and baseball the last couple of days.
No, we can go ahead and get men's basketball out of the way if you want to.
Okay, all right. You sound thrilled to do that, so we will get into that in just a moment. But you heard me reference Drew's story earlier. I want to remind anybody that's watching that's not a KSO member, head on over to kstateonline.com, get signed up. That way you get great K-State info from us here locally and then also your national info at On3. You get all that with your membership and also access to our premium message boards where I think today's hot topic is the fact that Kansas might be stealing the Royals and Chiefs from Missouri. So that feels like a win for a lot of us out here just to have that staple of pride and everything. So get in there and give your opinion. Also, that's where you're going to be able to throw questions out for me for the daily content that I'll be bringing to you, answering a question every day and going off of that for a little topic. But Drew brought up K-State basketball. Cats lost yesterday 66-54. Fan and I did a little post game. We don't have to rehash the game itself, but the notable news is that Coleman Hawkins did not play yesterday. Seems like he's not going to be ready to go for a while. Jerome Tang was not overly positive with his update after the game, and just watching Coleman Hawkins walk, I mean, he walked out in front of me through the tunnel after halftime yesterday. He walked like a guy that you just don't think would be able to play a college basketball game anytime soon. And it's unfortunate because we obviously saw yesterday how meaningful it is to what K-State does. And, you know, for the basketball team, they had 3 weeks where they brought life back. But yesterday was the last grasp. You win, you keep trying to do it, and maybe you can hold on for some hope. It's all gone now. This thing is over, and it's just going to rely on what they do in the Big 12 tournament. And if Coleman Hawkins isn't healthy or good to go, you probably don't have much of a chance there.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest takeaway of the entire game is that Coleman Hawkins did so much for this team that went just kind of unnoticed because he was the second ball handler. He was a guy that was a playmaker. And they just couldn't really get anything going offensively. I know that there was a little bit of talk of, like, were they getting good looks? Were they not? Hearing from Jerome Tang after the game, he said that they were getting good looks, but they weren't good looks in rhythm. And I think that that's kind of where I stand with how the offense looked. But if Hawkins can't play the rest of the season, and I have no real definitive answer either way, but I would probably lean more towards that he doesn't play again, just with the loss yesterday and so much uncertainty up in the air. I don't know if it's smart for him to even come back and play and test it out, because like you said, he looked like a guy that's in a lot of pain, and this isn't like the level of, like, we'll see, and we're going to talk more about Aoka Lee and the women tonight. It's not a situation like that where you can tell that she's in a lot of pain, but she is so dominant because she is so tall and so skilled around the basket that she can still come out there and play 5 or 6 minutes. But Hawkins isn't overly athletic, isn't necessarily like the most dominant basketball player, but he just fills up a stat sheet. So you kind of go with that, and like there's nothing that you can say, oh, he's like 65%. Like, let's throw him out there, because I think that that's probably where he was in both games in Utah. I know Jeff Goodman said that he got hurt in the Utah game, but I have some serious doubts about that. We all watched the Arizona game. He didn't look right.
Yeah, it's probably one of those where the Utah game probably sent it over the edge, but, you know, is trying and trying, and then the dam just breaks. It's unfortunate the way it's gone. So, yeah, it just doesn't seem like maybe the regular season for sure is in play. At this stage, you might think to yourself, though, hey, you know, maybe if he feels like giving it a go, the Big 12 tournament, when you think you can get this thing flipped around. And yeah, you know, I brought up the Aoka Lee thing yesterday because, I mean, you can clearly tell that she is still nowhere near 100% in the few minutes that she played against KU over the weekend. But the games are so different in how they're played between the men and the women. Like she, like you said, she's so skilled. She's so tall. Like, she can go in there and you don't, like, you can get away with her not being able to do much on defense or be able to move very much right now. If you pour it into her, you know, you got a valuable 5 minutes out of her in that KU game because she came in and bucket, and you were still like she can't be having the greatest time out there. But you can't do that in the men's game. It's just different. The defense isn't going to be able to make up for somebody that really can't do anything else. And, you know, Coleman Hawkins is what, 6'9", 6'10"? Like, everybody has somebody that's 6'9", 6'10". Most teams, as we saw yesterday with Arizona State, they got a couple of guys that are like that. So the real thing that's left for K-State, because the season is essentially over, and without Coleman Hawkins, it really makes even this scenario I'll throw out impossible. But the one benefit you'll have, and I've referenced this before, is that when I unfortunately had to cover Wichita State more than I would have liked down here in Wichita, I went to the American Athletic Conference tournament 1 year. Another year I did not go, but there were high expectations that second year I was down here covering Wichita State, and they failed to meet them. But I kept saying, like, look, this team was supposed to be this good before the season started. So why can't they just show up in Fort Worth and win 4 games in 4 days and you know, be the team that you expected? And that's kind of what you have to try and tell yourself or trick yourself into thinking in this process. So for the K-State men, that becomes a lot tougher if Coleman Hawkins were out for the rest of the year. We'll see if he can get back in there. But if the Big 12 tournament started today, this is what the bracket would look like in Kansas City. K-State, by way of the result of yesterday, because they entered yesterday, I think, in the 10-15 game, somehow, even though they lost, they moved up because now they're in a tie with West Virginia and Utah. Utah, by the way, fired Craig Smith today after they lost at UCF yesterday. We had a mention from Bracket Cat about Utah just fired their men's basketball coach. Apparently they are more committed to winning basketball games than we are. Yes and no. I mean, they're just at a different stage of this process because Craig Smith has been there longer and they've never made the NCAA tournament. Jerome Tang made the tournament once. It's only year three. Year two, you can make the argument, you know, injury, the Naquan Tomlin thing. He didn't have the full team this year, no doubt about it. Like, this is a massive failure by K-State basketball this year. But that's how you would look at it. Whereas Craig Smith didn't do anything at Utah. But I'm still a little surprised that they fired him.
I'll even add, when you fire your coach, and the biggest takeaway is, wow, that was weird. That means that you probably didn't fire you probably shouldn't have fired your coach. When that's the big national perception of what Utah just did. I mean, they finally lost another game, so they decided to fire Craig Smith, I guess. But, you know, whatever. Yeah. But the path that K-State has honestly isn't, like, super daunting until you get to Houston.
Well, that's the problem there. Yeah, I think anybody that's path goes across with Houston, you don't like it. You don't like if it involves Iowa State in Kansas City. That's why, you know, yesterday when it was looking, I think, like the 10-15 situation, you go, that's actually not bad. You get Arizona State, you can beat them. I know that sounds crazy after what we just witnessed yesterday, but you can beat them. TCU, we knew K-State was close to. Texas Tech, we know K-State was close to. And then at that point, like, they beat Arizona, they beat Kansas. Like, you wouldn't have to face one of those scary teams until the end. So like if you're K-State now, we're talking about the race for eight. Screw the race for eight. You're kind of wanting to, I don't know, bend for 10 or something. Like get your, I don't know what my rhyme for 11 would be, but that's kind of where you're at right now. If you want like a legitimate play at this, you're kind of hoping that the standings work out to where K-State is down there. But either way, that's the path as it stands right now. I think it's fascinating to look at. We'll update it again next week with just two games to go after that point, but fascinating to kind of see how it shapes up. And that would be K-State's path where, you know, the first two games you could win, but that Houston game is just a lot. And I think the only team that, as that bracket sits right now, the only team that would come out of that top half, it's either Houston or Iowa State. I don't foresee anybody else in there being able to beat Houston and Iowa State to try and get to the Big 12 title. But now, BYU maybe could make a case because of how well they're starting to play right now. But the path as it stands right there is actually pretty tough and unfortunate for K-State. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Big 12 tournament to me, I talked about this on Bosco's Boys when a question about the women's Big 12 tournament came up. So much of the conference tournaments, I don't think anybody shows up unless you're Iowa State thinking, we got to win this. I really want to win this. You just want your team to be there a couple days. So when you're hanging out watching games, it's, you know, you're like, hey, I'm still a part of this. You know, I can have fun watching, but I'm also going to have like my own rooting interest. It, you know, it wasn't fun like the end of Bruce Weber when they're playing in the, you know, 8-10 game or whatever, 7-10 game, and then they lose. And then it's like, there were only two games today. Half the building was empty and we're done. Like, I don't even get to experience four games tomorrow, and my team's not going to be one of them. Like, that's unfortunate. So I think you just kind of hope you make some noise. You're there for a little bit. But if we get to the point where we see K-State in that bottom half, or, you know, the top seeds are Texas Tech and Arizona, or, you know, if BYU slides into that spot, you would feel better about K-State being able to maybe actually do this, because all those teams in the bottom half, K-State has either beaten this year or is easily capable of beating. There are a lot of teams left in that top part that K-State didn't beat, and they seem to struggle with a little bit. But again, I don't want anybody thinking that we're back to living in fantasy land. I just wanted to put the path out there for everybody to kind of get an understanding of what that looks like and how that kind of ends up working out and everything else. So thinking about basketball, Drew, let's slide into a couple of the questions that were thrown out into the chat about all this. Danny says, can you guys provide who is eligible to return on the men's basketball team next season and who is worthy of those players? So that's a good question. And I think that's probably something for a longer format at some point, but we can kind of get into just like the gist of everything. There are a handful of players, obviously, that their eligibility is up. At least I think, you know, lawsuits,
you never know.
NCAA. Yeah. It's a toss up. But David Gasson, Coleman Hawkins, they will not be back next season. At the start of the year, Max Jones was in that crew. Now it seems like because of what's going on with former Division II players, and Max Jones spent a year playing Division II basketball trying to get their eligibility back for that, just like Diego Pavia did for junior college players, I think Max Jones might have a real shot at coming back to next year's team. So it'll be, you know, if you maybe Max Jones. Tyreek Smith, he also has to get a waiver, I believe, but he's the transfer they brought in midseason that couldn't play from Memphis, has spent time at a thousand schools, but he will be maybe on the team next year. So those are the maybes. The other guys that can come back next season are Brendan Hausen, Doug McDaniel, CJ Jones, Yagana Enyenso, Byfall, Mikhailib Rich, Taj Manning, Moby Ikeguruka, David Castillo. We've been pretty clear for probably over a month now. Mikhailib Rich will not be back next season. And then the rest of those guys, I think you say, I want Brendan Hausen back. I want Doug McDaniel back. I want Max Jones back if you can do it. Everybody else you say, if you lose them, it's not a big deal. Now, Moby Ikeguruka has a clear role next year. It's still 8 to 12 minutes a game at best. and just go in there, provide a burst, grab some rebounds, do some things for us. CJ Jones, probably a similar thing. Like, his role probably needs to take a little bit of a slide back. And then, you know, Bifall and David Castillo could be back next year. They're wild cards in terms of what their development looks like throughout this year and then over the offseason into play. Taj Manning, I think you say, hey, you can come back. But as we've seen, when's the last time Taj Manning played? I guess the loss to Oklahoma State or Houston. Taj Manning's just, if he's here, he's just here to be on the team. They like him. They think he's great to have around. But he's not going to contribute in any way. And then Ugonna and Yenso, I haven't seen anything this year to make me think that K-State needs to even waste any time in bringing Ugo back. But I'll let Drew tell you how he sees it.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm right there with you. I would actually lean more towards bringing CJ Jones back than not. But you're going to have to tell him that it's probably like a reduced role. But you do look, and I saw some comments saying, like, just play the young guys. Well, yesterday they did. Like, everybody outside of David Gasson that played yesterday has at least a shot of coming back. So I think that you just kind of see where that goes, and you move on from there. Everybody needs to re-recruit their own guys. So they'll figure something out. This can't be a... Yes, this can't be another rebuild it in the portal kind of type season, because we've already seen three of those. And I think that if it was working better, you'd probably like to see it again. But I think that you are going to get a lot of fatigue from everybody on, like, in the fan base. And if you do this again, because I can understand where it'd be very tiring learning about all the different guys on the roster for the fourth season in a row. So yeah, you have to have some continuity. And like that, I see a comment that says, like, bring everybody back who is truly bought in. I would imagine that's what the strategy is going to be this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to have to just go, hey, if we think that you're all the way in, well, there's no reason not to bring you back unless it's going to waste resources in a big way. Here's what I'll say. Joel commented, honestly, hoping for maximum return from the men's team. We'd love to see if continuity helps Tang be able to achieve his vision for a team. He's made 3 1-year rebuilds thus far. So there's a lot of talk right now in college basketball about how rebuilds and all this, and do you get the portal? Do you bring this guy? Is roster retention, is that the important thing? That seems to be the easy answer that a lot of coaches and people want to point to. I tend to think about it very differently than that. I don't think, while you may look at it and say, the teams that brought all these players back, they do better. Yes, but we also have a lot of instances where teams are built in 1 year and they're just fine. K-State in year one under Jerome Tang. New coach, totally new type of team. They did just fine. They made it to the Elite Eight. While Kentucky is going through a bit of a rough patch, but they've dealt with injuries. Totally new team under Mark Pope. They've done just fine this year in the toughest league in the country for this season in the SEC. They will be an NCAA tournament team. It's not a huge deal there. You can also, I think, flip it around and look at teams that, like, KU brought a lot of key pieces back this year. It's gone poorly for them because I think that when you bring the wrong guys back, and not necessarily from, like, a personality standpoint, obviously I'm not close enough to that program to understand the ins and outs of that, but just from looking at how those guys play and how they fit together, if you just bring guys back for the sake of bringing them back, it may not work out. Cause I kind of think, you know, the Dickinson and Harris relationship for KU has kind of held them hostage the last couple of years now in terms of them reaching their ceiling. So I don't think it's as much about just bringing guys back to bring them back and then you're going to be good. It's about not having to roll the dice with personalities or maybe it taking too much time to kind of take. Where, you know, in year one under Jerome Tang, those guys fit together immediately. They all had their roles, like they were all in it. The last 2 years, we've seen it's taken too long to get this thing together. And the other thing that people should look at is that eventually it did come together for both teams. Like, both teams made it to the final 2 weeks of the season where we talked about them still legitimately having a chance to make the NCAA tournament. It just came together too late. And again, we've talked about personality problems. Back-to-back seasons that K-State's had to have a guy kicked off the team. You have back-to-back seasons where guys that are supposed to be probably one of your two best players are held out or given minimal minutes in games early in the season because of buy-in or everything else. Like, the reason why a team like Iowa State is successful is because they didn't have to try to bring in too many new personalities. They retained a lot of known personalities. That, to me, is the biggest thing over just bringing guys back for the sake of bringing them back. I think it's, you know, a much more nuanced conversation, but like, that's the deeper part behind it, where teams that bring guys back aren't doing it just because we need to bring guys back. It's because of the circumstance, and you know what you're going to get out of them. And that's where the hope would be next year, is you've already got Doug McDaniel up to speed versus what he was this season. Brendan Hausen, you haven't had to worry about him all year, but you're going to bring a guy back that you know who he is, you know what he does, you're good in that position. That's why you would like to have a guy like Max Jones back next year. Maybe not in the same level of role, and I think that became more clear after he struggled yesterday with a big opportunity to kind of step up and be the number three yesterday with Coleman Hawkins out. But to me, that is what you're looking at here. And if you can have that kind of foundation, then you have to get back to being better with the stuff that used to be number one on the importance level in college basketball recruiting. Like, you still got to bring in guys that you think are a personality fit. They have to have specific skills that work. Like, this best player available thing, that doesn't work for anybody in college basketball. And Kentucky would be a pretty good example of that. They didn't, you know, outside of Brea, who they brought in, where he would kind of go into that best player available type category, they just brought in a lot of guys that kind of fit and wanted to work hard together. Same type of thing with what Utah, because they've got similar logos and colors. Houston has done with the transfers that they've brought in. Not necessarily the best player available, and you would think that at this point, Kelvin Sampson would be able to do that if he wanted to, but he's brought fits into his program, and he's gotten bad fits out of his program through the portal. So, That's a deeper conversation to have. I might bring Alec Bussey in to talk about that, because he's really been fired up about that, writing stories about it and looking at it. And then he's got deep connections to some people in college basketball programs that have done research on it that I find to be very fascinating. So that's how I see it. It's a long answer and everything else, and not interesting or helpful in this moment, but I wanted to just give my thoughts out there on that, because I think too many times we just think you bring everybody back, it's going to work out. That's not the case.
No, and I think that everything that you said was exactly right. Like, you can't just bring guys back to bring them back, but you have to find ways to get good players as well. Like, and I think that yesterday kind of showed that. Let's get into the positivity. Let's rock. Do you want to go women's basketball or baseball first?
Let's talk about women. The K-State and Baylor women play tonight, 6 o'clock ESPN2. K-State going to finish out the regular season, their last two games, both the national TV billing off of ESPN+. For all of you out there that detest that streaming platform, you can actually watch it on your TV, a real channel that you've heard of before, ESPN2 tonight for K-State Baylor. This is a massive one in what is left in the Big 12 this season, because this is perfect scripting for the Big 12 in terms of how the season is coming down. I think when they scheduled this, they probably thought that Iowa State would be in this mix too, but you have three teams that legitimately have a chance to win the Big 12 here at the end of the season: TCU, Baylor, and K-State. TCU and Baylor tied at the top at 14-2. K-State at 13-3. All of these teams play each other in the final two games of the season. So K-State and Baylor will go tonight. The path for K-State, they have to win tonight. Obviously, they have to win at Iowa State over the weekend. And then you would hope that after you beat Baylor tonight, they do you a solid and they turn around and they beat TCU on Saturday. And if that were to occur, because TCU is not losing to Houston, they are bad. You would have a three-way tie as co-champs in the Big 12 this season. And you really hope it happens. I mean, I think K-State can take care of their business, but just in terms of hoping that the rest of it plays out, certainly Jeff Mitty and this entire team is very deserving of it as long as they win these next two games, because here they are, a second straight season where easily their best player has to miss a large chunk of time, and they've battled through it pretty well.
Yeah, I'll actually be at the game tonight as a fan. So, you know, taking a page out of your playbook on Saturday.
Yeah, I told my wife after we got home from the game, I said, you know, it's kind of nice just to go to a game as a fan still. Like a K-State game, obviously, yeah. Like I've been to Royals games as a fan, but there's just like something different about being able to sit there, watch your school, and like clap and cheer when something good happens for them. So, yes, very enjoyable.
But it's a huge game tonight. Spread is 7.5, which even with Baylor without one of their best players, feels a little high, but K-State's been rolling at home. So I wouldn't be surprised if they cover the number. Baylor has a lot of three-point shooting, so got to defend the arc tonight and also make shots. And the games that K-State has lost, which obviously hasn't been very many, they haven't been able to hit shots and get shots well, or get open shots. So those are probably two of the keys. Interested to see how much Ayuka Lee plays tonight. And then, again, like you said, you got to take care of your own business and then hope that Baylor's able to knock off TCU on Sunday, because why not have it be a Sunday for both teams?
Yeah, good point by Bracket Cat. K-State would be the one seed in Kansas City with wins over both the other tied teams in this scenario. That is notable there because of the way the schedule worked out. K-State already has the win over TCU, so they would get the easier path in Kansas City. And that's where we talk about, while the focus on the women is, and what I think will define their season, are these two games right here, and then also the game that they have no control over on Saturday. They winning the regular season Big 12 is more important. You do that, that's awesome. But then you get to Kansas City, like, conference tournaments, to me, unless you're a team that isn't already in the field for the NCAA tournament, conference tournaments are for the fans.
Yeah. Like,
so you want to be able to have as easy of a path as possible, because you want to see your team there every day. Like, it's fun, regardless, to just sit around and watch basketball all day, but it's a lot more fun when your team's there. So that would be the impact of K-State being able to kind of get the higher seed there, and everybody get to have a good week and a half in Kansas City, where the K-State women are the talk of the town in the conference tournament. And then obviously the men's tournament would start on Tuesday.
By the way, thanks for nothing, West Virginia, getting just blasted by TCU.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
After West Virginia beat K-State. But the longer that I kind of get away from that game in Morgantown, I just shake my head at the Big 12 schedule makers for having K-State play a game that ends late afternoon in Manhattan, and then have them go to West Virginia and play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, what are you going to do there? So I think that also, you win these two games, and even if you don't win the whole tournament in Kansas City, I think if you win these two games and at least get to the semifinals, you're probably hosting the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament too. And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah. I agree with you that it feels like just a schedule loss that was baked in there for K-State to have to go on the road 1 p.m. on a Monday at West Virginia.
A home game on Saturday.
Yeah. That's just, you know, what are we doing there, folks? That was bad scheduling by the Big 12. I'm sure Jeff Mitty would not make that excuse, but I'll make it for him. That was dumb, because the Cats should be 14-2 right now and also in control, just being able to win this thing outright. But nonetheless, big one tonight for K-State. Got to win this one to keep the Big 12 title hopes alive. And you win this one tonight, I think it pretty much solidifies that you will be hosting an NCAA tournament game. Regardless of if it's a 3 or a 4, I think you win tonight. There's no chance K-State would slip below the 4 line. So there will be postseason basketball actually in Manhattan this season with the K-State women, and how that's going to go on with everything there. Now we have one other team to talk about, Drew. I don't think we thought, after the start they had in week one, we would do much talking about baseball this year, but it is good to keep people up to speed on what happened with the Batcats, because they went 3-0 in the state of Texas, beating number 4 Arkansas, number 25 Michigan, and number 13 TCU over the weekend. And the victory over TCU was not particularly close yesterday. K-State cruised comfortably. TCU used 1,000 pitchers in the game. But this was a nice bounce back for the K-State baseball team after they started 1-3, dropping games against, you know, like Washington, who they probably should have beat. They lost to Coastal Carolina, who is not the same Coastal team that was in the College World Series a couple of years ago. And then their best game was probably their loss at North Carolina, but they were 1-3. And you go, oh, here we go again. It's, you know, all this talk about K-State baseball, but they get the job done in a pretty nifty way, being the only team to go 3-0 down in Texas in a loaded field and making some noise there.
Yeah, just crazy that I think that some of what baseball has at the beginning of the year, it is just a little bit of regionality. So I think that you could say that K-State was probably a little bit rusty, not able to get a lot of things done in Manhattan. So then when you play in Conway, you don't play very well. And then you come back in Arlington and you play really, really well against a lot better competition. You could say that K-State owns Arkansas now. So that's kind of fun. Michigan is actually one of the better colder weather and northern teams in the entire country. So to beat them was really fun. And then TCU, I think that TCU's ranking was probably a little bit overinflated with I think that their best pitcher has been ruled out for the season before the season even started. So you see that 13, that's probably a little bit too high. But the things that I really want to highlight are, one of them is what DY pointed out in his takeaways from baseball over the weekend on KSO. The pitching was so good this weekend. Jacob Frost and Blake Dean were really, really good against Arkansas. It was a trio of guys against Michigan and TCU. But then the other thing that I'll really point out, and it's something that you've pointed out and have harped on with Pete Hughes forever, the defense was so much better in these three games. Like K-State with zero errors in two games. They had two against TCU, but to go a whole weekend with only two errors, when really that was what sunk them in that first weekend. I think the first game against Washington, they had two errors in the first inning. So to go through three games and only have two errors and the bats are coming around, and to the point where you could say that they left too many men on base against TCU, even though they still scored 10 runs.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, obviously I didn't watch it yesterday because we were at basketball, and I'm not giving Flow Sports a dime of my money, those turds. They still have enough money from me for getting to cancel my subscription when Bruce Weber took K-State to a Flow Sports event. So I should be getting to watch these games for free, so I wasn't going to watch. But I listened to the final few innings on my way out of Manhattan, and Brian Smoller was down calling the game for K-State, and basically it was just like, you know, those two errors, even they were true scoring decisions. So yeah, the defense was phenomenal for K-State, and also on top of that, the pitching was great. So you get great pitching, you get good defense. We know that K-State has been a team offensively that under Pete Hughes has gotten better and better, and that showed out over the weekend as they go 3-5-10 runs. So they did a lot, and it's good to see that they were able to compete at this level. Now, the thing has always been, though, what is this team going to do against the teams you should beat? Now, the good news is they don't have to play teams like that for at least another weekend, because the Batcats will be back in Texas this weekend. Different Dallas suburb. They'll be in Frisco at the Frisco Classic, where they will face number 2 LSU. Sam Houston, who is a perennial Southland Conference champion, and then Nebraska, who just recently dropped out of the top 25. K-State going to get to face Nebraska three times this year because these teams still play the non-conference home and home with each other as well. So a lot of looks at the Huskers this season, but not an easy field for K-State to navigate. The Wildcats have played LSU down in this event before, but it presents another big opportunity. And if K-State can, they don't even have to beat LSU, but if they hang around in that game, you look at it and you go, man, you could really get some people on your side and generate some excitement in a year where I think people should remember that K-State made it to the Super Regional last year. They lost, obviously, quite a few integral pieces to that. This is essentially a rebuilding year for K-State. Yes. Not to the extent of, I don't think this team should, you know, be 20 games below 500, that kind of type of deal. But it's one of those where, as much as bad baseball really grinds my gears, if this team was not able to make it to the NCAA tournament, that would not be a failure of the season. So for them to do this and show this upside kind of gives a new wrinkle and belief to what this year could be for K-State to follow up a super regional appearance in 2024.
Yeah, and also you look at what their schedule is like, and it is literally any given game, but if they beat the teams that they should beat, winning those three games over the weekend and stealing like one against Sam Houston or one against Nebraska or one against LSU this weekend, and then you beat Nebraska and Manhattan and you beat Creighton and you kind of stack some of these wins and you probably go 1-1 against Northeastern. If K-State is on the bubble of the turn or of making the tournament, that's probably a resume that gets them in the tournament.
Hey, and Northeastern, they had 2-0 lead on the Red Sox last week. My favorite thing is that Northeastern and the Red Sox always play each other down at spring training every year. Northeastern did end up losing 5-2 in that game. Joel with a great comment here that I wanted to throw up to explain how college baseball kind of works. He says, geez, bro, who stacked their schedule? I guess them getting left out that one year really didn't sit well. That is exactly what happened. Like that. So it's a very strange deal. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but essentially the way college baseball works in terms of what matters and like the metrics that they would look at the end of the season is RPI plays a big role in it. And it's a lot better to get your butt kicked by really, really good teams than beat mediocre teams or below average teams. That's why you'll see some teams sometimes if, you know, the weather is going to be iffy, they just say, hey, we're going to cancel this game. It's not worth playing. I think K-State did that last year. Yep. They didn't play a game because it you know, there was no reason to try and get it in and it wasn't going to do anything for them. And that's exactly what happened when K-State got left out that one year. And really, I think it may have been even the year before they were on the first four out, but that obviously kind of spurred it on where K-State was like, what do we need to do? And Pete Hughes and the baseball program talked to different people around the industry, and they were basically like, it comes down to your schedule. And you kind of have to, for what people thought was going on in college basketball with the Big 12 gaming the net, Pete Hughes and K-State baseball are absolutely gaming the RPI. But it's not an indictment on Pete Hughes or anybody. It's an indictment on the way that the sport works out and the way things sit right now. So it's absolutely intentional by Pete Hughes and the baseball staff. It worked out for him last year to get in. And once they got in, we saw what happened. And the same type of deal is going to try and play out this year. And that's why you see games on the schedule where K-State starts the year with four games at Coastal Carolina, two with Coastal, one against St. Joe's, one against Washington. And then they stayed in North Carolina and played number six UNC. And then they have this loaded field, three top 25 teams down in Texas. They're going back. They'll face LSU, who is number two. They'll face Nebraska, who's been in the top 25. And then later in the year, you look around and they're going to play a team like Northeastern that Drew mentioned. Last year, K-State went up in the middle of the year and played at UConn. They didn't win that game at UConn, but UConn is traditionally the best Big East team in baseball. You use it to your advantage, boost you up, and that's where the Batcats sit. So they had a good weekend because not only did they game the RPI, they doubled down on it because they just won all three games.
Yeah, and that's why this weekend, it's not a huge deal if they go 1-2. Like 1-2 is probably you're feeling pretty good.
Yep. And then at that point you would get everything together, say, all right, we did what we could, and you'll have the home opener come next week on Wednesday with Creighton coming to town. And then they'll have a three game set over the weekend with William and Mary. So it'd certainly be nice if they were playing baseball at home right now. The weather out is pretty good for this time of the year, but you'll have to wait another week for Batcats baseball to get to Manhattan. Hopefully they keep the momentum going, but overall, as many have noted, a pretty positive weekend for K-State sports. Just unfortunately, the men's basketball team was not a part of that after they gave a good 3-week stretch. So that will do it for us today. Reminder, go to kstateonline.com, get signed up, become a member. If you're not, you'll get access to inside info, premium message boards, great recruiting updates from Drew. You can sign up for your K-State non-3 membership at kstateonline.com and on three. And that's also where you're going to be able to throw some other questions my way. You know, we had some of them about roster construction and a lot of big picture conversations that need to happen about this basketball team moving forward for the men. We'll have those. And when I have the daily content out for you, and to get those questions answered, you can throw them in the message board thread that I have up at KSO. Right now, those videos will start tomorrow. So you'll wake up, you'll have 5 to 15 minutes. I have no idea how long it'll go. I got to pick which question, and that'll probably dictate it. But get involved with that. We appreciate everybody watching this one. Hey, Danny, I see what you're saying, and we already did it, and I wasn't going to do it again, and I'm not, just because obviously you don't want it. But, hey, cats2ireland.com for those of you that want to get over to Ireland and have a little fun with us. August 23rd. Oh my gosh, Drew, I didn't even bring it up. We're less than half a year away now. Yesterday was the 6-month point. I just totally blew past it, but here we sit, 5 months and X amount of days. Cause it's February, short month.
I'm going to say 5 months and 29 days.
Okay. Okay. All right. Good call. The short month, it really threw my grandma for a loop yesterday. We had lunch with her before the basketball game, and my brother is getting ready to move. And he says, yeah, I'm going down on the 27th. And my girl's like, why are you going so early? I thought you didn't start work until the 1st. And my other brother goes, it's a short month, Grandma. And she goes, oh, yeah. So you got to be careful. It is a short month. That's why you think, wait, is March 5th? How can that be next week when K-State opens the season? Yeah, I had to do a double take myself. But it is, because short month. Grandma, short month Mason, short month everybody watching that. Get that in your calendars. Only 4 days left in February, but a lifetime left to become a member at KSO. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. We're out of here. Thanks for watching. Enjoy whatever I bring you tomorrow. And then Drew and I back here on Wednesday. We'll get the time established. You'll find that all tweeted out. I'll also post it on the message board and everything else. But we enjoy you tagging along with us and going live on this Monday.